Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
So I think there's a big misconception if you've read, you know, some of the multifamily books, or you hear it, you hear people say that, you know, you don't need to qualify to buy multifamily. It's based on the deal. Well, that's not true. That's kind of a big, I don't know, lie, I guess. Because you do have to qualify.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with HomeInvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity and properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Todd. And how are you today?
Awesome. I'm awesome. We are here for another hump day hustle, as always, with John. And you had an entertaining day so far. You were there with me, did a video recording, and I did a talk about the apartment deal that I closed on last month. So that was kind of fun, and I got another deal coming up. I don't know if I really talked too much about that, just kind of mentioned it, but just kind of a fun deal. It's always fun, and I said this when I was there, it's always fun to be in a room full of other people who, you know, have the same attitude as you, have that, you know, same drive as you, and just, you know, they're out there trying to better themselves and make a difference and really just crush it. And it's always fun to have that room versus, you know, the Debbie Downer room that a lot of times a lot of other people are in, let's just say. And so it's just fun to be in those types of rooms. You can feel the energy when you're in there. So it's, it was always fun to do those types of things.
Well, I thought it was a really good meeting. And also it's just good to hear from somebody who's actually doing something. So many people that go to these groups, nothing against them, but you know, they're in the learning stage.
Yeah.
And so it's good, you know, I guess maybe sometimes once somebody has made it or somebody has been successful at something, they kind of leave the learning group and go off onto their own. They don't need the learning group anymore, potentially. So it's good to have you come back into it. And I'm sure you wouldn't say that you've reached the pinnacle of success, but you've had an example of success that you were willing to share with us. And so that was really great to see.
Well, you know, I'm actually like that, the anti what you just said. I don't like the people that they make it and so then they leave that group that they learned from to get there. Because it's like, well, wait a second. Now you just took advantage of that group, learned what you needed to learn, and then you just walk away when you think you know you you know, think you know everything, and you never do. You're always going to learn. And you'll learn from newer people, people that have done just one deal you can learn from. But yep. More than that is, don't you feel like you should be giving back? And that's kind of what I like about groups like that. And I don't know. For me, it hasn't crossed my mind to stop going to meetups just because I've quote unquote somehow arrived. To me, why not be part of it, you know, and help build it? And, you know, now that I've done some deals, I have more value to add and help make that group even better. And other people can continue to do the same thing. So.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, listen, you know, in this Hump Day Hustle series we've been on, which is how to buy an apartment building, we've gone through quite a few steps. I think we've gone through 8 different episodes with this series. And so the next step that we wanted to get into here was the financing aspect. Now, in previous episodes, we've talked about, you know, kind of some preliminary aspects or parts of it maybe. But let's get into a little bit more detail, because, you know, at this stage in our theoretical purchase, we have gotten the deal under contract. So now, how are we going to pay for it?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? How are we going to pay for it? And like you said, we've already kind of mentioned that, but because when we talked really about building our team, we talked about we need to build our lender team. And if we're going to raise the money, we need to build our private lender team. So you need to be thinking of that from the start, right? You don't just put a property under contract and go, I got to get money for this deal. You should be ahead of the game. And so even though we're talking about it at this stage, you should have already been in that process. You should already have, you should understand what kind of property you're buying, right? And what type of financing it'll qualify for. And if you don't know the answer, read books and read blogs and you listen to podcasts and stuff like that. But then B is talk to mortgage brokers, talk to bankers and other lenders and figure out, okay, if I'm buying let's say 32 unit building for $800,000, what type of financing can I get? Or if I'm buying a, you know, 250 unit building for a $20 million, what kind of financing should I be expecting? So you want to know, you know, what your strategy is and then understand the type of financing you can get. So,
So let's dive into one of these aspects. So a local bank, local lenders, that would be one option to pursue. Maybe just describe kind of that relationship and some of the pros and cons for working with a local bank.
Yeah, so your local bank's going to be potentially a great option, especially if you're going to be purchasing buildings. There's a couple types of buildings that you're going to look at local lenders for, and I'm going to call them lenders because you also have bridge lenders who aren't necessarily your local banks, but they're going to be, and they might do regional stuff too. A lot of the bridge lenders will do regional. Actually, some of the bridge lenders will do national as well, but I'm going to fit them under the local. So you have your local banks are going to be really good for deals that are a loan size under $1 million. They're going to be really good for deals that are in tertiary markets, so not your primary market and not your secondary market. So basically markets that are, let's say, under 500,000 MSA and probably even a little bit bigger than that. But we'll just use 500,000 MSA.
Sorry to interrupt you, but MSA, go ahead and define that.
Just the metropolitan statistical area. So it's the, you know, your suburbs and the city and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So they're also really good for renovation type projects or problems in the project. So if the property has a lot of warts, if you're buying it because it's got, you know, a lot of hair, maybe it's got 85% occupancy or 72% occupancy, or it's, you know, just needs a ton of work. And you want to try to borrow that construction money for it. these local banks will be able to provide you with that a lot better than a lot of the national lenders. A lot of the national lenders won't even touch that type of stuff. They're also going to lend on maybe some things that a lot of national lenders will frown upon, flat roofs, for instance. National lenders will lend on properties with flat roofs, but they don't like them nearly as much as a pitched roof. Properties that are older, same thing. So really, local banks are great for, local lenders are great for properties that aren't going to be kind of perfect. And I shouldn't say, I don't really mean perfect, because I'll explain, you know, that a little bit more. But if it's got warts, local lenders. Now, here's the problem with local lenders, right? So local lenders like local people. And if you're not a local, it's going to be a lot harder to get financing on the deal. Now, if you've done some deals in the area and you've got some presence, that's going to, you know, help your case out. But if you're first time, first deal, it's going to be a lot harder. Now, some of these regional bridge lenders and national bridge lenders, they're going to be able to see past that. But if it's just a local, you know, five branch, two branch, whatever bank, and they don't have presence all over, they're going to be a lot more difficult to get financing from. The other thing is, they're going to require recourse. Most of the cases are going to require full recourse, meaning they can come after you if something doesn't work out, which of course you're never planning on, but non-recourse is just, it doesn't show up anywhere. And, you know, obviously they can't come after you unless you break some sort of term, you know, fraudulent or something like that. The other thing that's great with local lenders is they're going to be a lot cheaper to finance from the beginning, right? So they're not going to charge you a lot of fees. They're going to be very light on their fees. They're going to be flexible. They're super flexible. Especially the local banks. They're, you know, if they give you a quote for 5%, you might be able to get them to go down to 4.75%, or, you know, whatever. They tell you they can do 20 year amortization. You might be able to get them up to 25 year. So I just had a portfolio loan done, I guess it's been about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now. And it was a local lender. They, you know, they came in with their quotes, and I knocked them down on their interest rate by, not by a lot, by maybe, you know, from like 4.75 to like 4.6 or something like that. But they, I said, look, this is a non-negotiable. I want a 10-year fixed rate. And they don't offer 10-year fixed rates. They offer 5-year. And I said, well, I'm not going to do this loan. This was, you know, like a $3 million loan. And I said, I'm not going to do this loan unless it's a 10-year fix. And so they allowed that to happen. They gave me a 10-year fixed. They gave me great interest rate. The only thing that they changed, they said, look, we'll give you this interest rate. We'll give you the 10-year fixed, but instead of a 25-year amortization, you're going to have to do a 20-year. And I said, numbers work fantastic for me. I like that quick pay down. I'm not going to keep these things for over 20 years. Let's do it. So it worked for me. It worked for them. That's the great thing about local banks, are super flexible. But of course, I did have to sign recourse on that debt.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, that's probably the case a lot of times, because local banks are basically small businesses.
Yep.
You know, they have a couple different investors, a couple different local business people, and, you know, they can negotiate with you.
Yep.
So, you know, they're not all the same, so you might not experience that the same way at each one, but.
Well, and that's 100% true, John, with some of the national lenders where you're getting, you know, Fannie Freddie back, Fannie Freddie, you're buying them. It's going to be pretty standard. You get what you get. They've got their terms. They've got, you know, different tiers that you can do. There's, you know, a little cushion there, but you can't necessarily negotiate a lot with them. Where the local banks, you know, they're going to have their 20 to 25 year lock. They're going to have their 5-year arm. They're going to have their 5% interest. But then you might talk to the next bank, and they've got a totally different system, different interest rates. You know, I just talked to a bank that can get me potentially into a loan for under 4% right now. And this is a local bank at a 25-year term, 5-year ARM. Then they also offer a different product where it's a 10-year ARM, 20-year AM at 4.75%. So, I mean, there's just so much variation. That's why it's good to talk to a lot of them to see where they're at.
Yeah, and then so if you are investing out of state, you might not have as good a luck with these local banks. But if you have a business partner or an investor partner that is local to the market, you could potentially overcome that hurdle by, bringing them into that lending process.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing local banks don't like as much is they don't like the syndication as much.
Okay.
So they have some hesitation with that as well.
Do you have any recommendation about how to kind of tuck them into it if they first say no?
I think you first of all, you just got to be open and upfront with them from the start. You've got to talk to them about what you're doing, what's going on, and why what you're doing makes sense for them. You've got to talk to them about your experience. So when we'll go through this. I guess we can go through it now. So when you're presenting to a bank, and this is any lender, you should be very prepared, right? You should have a full bio yourself. So what I do is I present a full business plan, and my business plan is about the property, but it's also about me. So that full business plan is going to have a cover page, going to have the property name, going to have how many units it is, going to have some pictures of the property. And then it's going to have, my company logo and my company contact information. And then I'm going to have a table of contents. And then I'm going to have an executive plan. And I'm going to have a breakdown of, here are the highlights of the property. Here's what we're doing. And then I'm going to have a bio, a full page, bio of who I am. Why should you invest with me? I'm also going to have in there something about my property management company, who they are, why they're good. Same thing with my closing company and my, any of my attorneys and really my whole team, my contractors, if that's the case, then what am I doing with the property? Why can I make this property work? All that kind of stuff. So I'm giving them a full, 8 to 10, 12 page business plan about the property. Also about the market, why do I like the market? So they can not necessarily so they can understand what's going on in the market because they're from there and they probably understand it. But so they know that I have done the research and I understand it and they know that I'm committed to it. So I give a full, in-depth description of the market, what's going on, why I like it, strengths and weaknesses, all that kind of stuff. And then with that, I'm going to submit my purchase and sale agreement. But more than just this purchase and sale agreement, I'm going to highlight key terms, key dates, that type of stuff. Also, if the listing broker has an offering memorandum, which is just a listing presentation, I'll give that to them. I'll give them my current property's current rent roll, the trailing 12-month profit and loss, the last 2 years of profit and loss on the property, and then I give them a pro forma where I think the property can go, how long it'll take to get there, like a 5-year snapshot of where this property is going to be, all the capital I'm going to bring into it, how much my reserves are going to be, how much my yearly reserves are going to be. I'll give them a full budget, all that kind of stuff. And then I also have a loan tab, and that gives me where I want my loan to be. And I'm always trying to go a little aggressive on that to where I'd like to get a 30-year. I'd like to get at 4.5%. And that tab will show in the reflections of my pro forma so they can see, oh, this is what he'd like to get. Let's see where we can get them. So I always kind of put that little carrot in front of them. I don't know if that works or not, but I pretend it does. So, yeah. But yeah, it's really important to sell yourself and to sell the property. They're looking heavily at the property, but they also look at you as well. So,
yeah. I know on a previous episode, we talked a lot about how much time, you know, physically your time that it takes when you're doing all your due diligence and this process. So I assume that some of that time, a lot of it may be dedicated to this proposal for the financing.
Yeah. So the cool thing with this proposal, if you're doing a syndication or you're raising any type of money or you're getting partners or you know, however, is that this presentation can kind of be mixed. You might have to do some edits. You might have a lender presentation, or you might have an investor presentation, but they're going to be, you know, very similar in terms. You might just take off for the lender. You might not show some of the, you might delete, you know, a page or so or whatever. But that's one good thing. And then the other thing is you get a template after you do it a few times. So, you know, now that I have, you know, one, I have another one. I have another one. So once you do it once, you're going to have a template and you'll add to it, subtract it and change it and stuff like that. But
yeah,
you've got a template. So
yep.
Especially if you're buying in the same market, then you don't have to update the market information. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, obviously you do every once in a while. If you're doing something from, you know, that you made in 2006 and you're using the same numbers in 2018, you might have some problems, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're making several offers within a month or a quarter, a lot of the statistics should stay the same.
Yeah. If you're buying that property in the same year to year, maybe even a year and a half, depending on how, quick your market's moving, a lot of it should be the same.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, let's pull it back in here to the topic of the day. So we talked a lot about the banks here and the local banks. Before we move on to national lenders, is there any final thoughts on banks?
Well, yeah, so I'll add bridge lenders in there. And bridge lenders are, you know, local, regional, sometimes national, and they're also going to be able to provide, you know, the construction type loans. Are going to be able to lend on the dirty properties, the properties with warts on them. They're going to be a lot more expensive than the local banks. They're going to charge you more interest rate. They're going to charge you, you know, somewhere right now today between like 6% and, you know, up 10% maybe. They're going to charge you some more points up front. They might charge you some exit points, but they're going to be interest only for, you know, typically three plus years, interest only loan. And they're going to, you know, they're just kind of a different animal. They're a little more expensive. Of course, you maybe avoid them if you can, but they also have their place in the market. You know, they definitely have their place and they definitely can help you get a deal done that you otherwise wouldn't do without them.
Yeah. So if your strategy is to go after value add properties where either the vacancy is it's a high vacancy rate or there's some repairs that are needed,
yeah,
beyond what the local bank is comfortable with, then that's where the bridge lender can fit in.
Yep. And they call it a bridge because they're, you know, bridging from your purchase through to your refinance. Their plan is to have you refinance. They're not going to have, I mean, they'll have prepayment penalties if you pay them off in like less than a year, but they're not going to have long-term prepayment penalties. They want you to refinance. That's what their plan is.
Yep. Okay. Very good. So then national lenders would be another one to consider.
Yeah, so national lenders is what it sounds like. Lenders that lend up properties all over the country. You'll find that, you know, some of the big banks like Wells Fargo and stuff can get you some of this type of debt. They always will sell it to the Fannie Freddie. Brokers will help secure this debt. So these loans are much more in a box, and they'll vary depending on the market. You know, if you're in a high growth, big market. If you're in like a Dallas, if you're in a Houston, well, not Houston. Houston's a weird market. If you're in a New York City, you know, they're going to be more aggressive than if you're in a Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, you know, something like that. But they'll lend in those types of markets as well. They're going to have, you're going to get a typically a 75% loan to value, but somewhere between 70 and 80%. You're going to get a non-recourse. The loan has to be $1 million or more. And I've heard of people getting loans for under $1 million, but the standard is $1 million or more. And the higher it is, the more likely you'll get, you know, good terms and you'll be able to get the loan. So if you got a $5 million loan, Fannie Freddie will look at that probably more attractive. It's more attractive than $1 million loan. Occupancy, that's going to need to be, you know, 90% or better for the last, you know, trailing 3 months. They're going to want to see, you know, 6 months would definitely be better, or a year would be even better than that. They're going to want to see your debt service cover ratio of 1.25. And this is really for every bank, which debt service means like you need to be making $1.25 for every dollar of debt that you're paying. So you're making more money than you're paying out on the loan. They're also not going to want to see a ton of repairs. And by repairs, I don't mean that you're going to put $5,000 into a unit to make it look nicer. I mean repairs that are needed, like from day one, to keep the occupancy where it's at. So I'm talking like new roof that they need you to do. I'm talking, update the plumbing, update the electrical, foundation issues, stuff like that. If you've got a property that was built in, 1985 and it hasn't been updated since, they probably won't care as much about that. Especially, they're not going to lend on that necessarily. They're not going to lend on your project. They'll allow you to, take $2 million out of your pocket and renovate that. They'll still lend on it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. They prefer pitched roofs. They'll lend on flat roofs, but pitched roofs are definitely preferred. They prefer newer properties. The newer, the better for them.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but when you say they prefer it, does that mean they'll hem and haw about whether they're going to give you the loan, or they're going to increase their interest rates or increase the down payment?
Yeah. I guess both. You might have a challenge of getting a loan if it's a 1950s built building. I mean, I can't speak for, I'm not a mortgage broker. I'm not a lender. But from my experience and from what I've heard from experience for others is that it's more difficult, especially if you're in, let's say you're buying a 1950 built building and that's a C-class area. With the flat roof, I think you're going to have a really big challenge of getting non-recourse Fannie Freddie type debt on that. If it's a 1970s built building, pitched roof, C-class area, primary or secondary market, and it meets the other criteria, you'll probably be able to get the financing for it. So, I can't say yes or no 100%. You need to be talking to mortgage brokers on it, but
sure.
The cleaner it is that, the more in that box it is, the more likely you'll get the loan on it and, get the deal done. So the cool thing with these loans is they're fixed. You've got your amortization on them can be 30 years, sometimes even higher. HUD has, 35 year. You could, and HUD, I think, is fixed for all 35 years. They're locked for, you can go as low as I've seen 5 years, but they can be locked for 10 plus years if you want. You're going to pay higher interest rate the more you lock them in for. There's usually a prepayment penalty. So if you sell in the first 3 to 5 years, you're usually going to pay something. And it's a ladder going down. So you might pay 5% if you sell in the first, 2 or 3 years, and then 4, 3, 2, 1, eventually, goes away or stays at 1 until year 10 is over or whatever. Some of that stuff can be bought out of the loan. So,
okay.
So I guess the good thing with them, it's going to be, you know, your cheapest money, not necessarily up front, but it's going to be your cheapest money in the long term. And it's, you know, it's going to be non-recourse. The bad thing is they're picky, right? They've got their standards and, you know, they're picky. And so that would be, I guess, the bad thing is they're not going to lend on as much hair.
Yeah. And I've also heard of some lenders that provide like a 40-year term.
That might be HUD. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's specifically for like low income housing or, but I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I think some of the, low income product, you can get even better terms. Okay. But, I'm not a loan expert. I know enough to be able to get myself through. And then I use my lenders to, yep, you know, guide me and lead me. That's why team members are so important.
Great. Okay. Okay. Then the next type of lender that we want to talk about is the conduit lenders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, explain what that might be a new term for some people. What does that mean?
Yeah. So conduit lender, you know, we'll often lend nationwide. They're going to be a lot more flexible than Fannie Freddie. They're going to offer a lot of the same terms, but their interest rates usually are going to be a bit higher, and their prepayments might be higher, especially up front. They're going to want to see loan balances, million or more. So conduit lenders are kind of like your Wall Street people that, you know, they take the money from Wall Street to package the money together, and they put these packages together with loans. Insurance companies, they'll sell them to insurance companies and stuff like that. So just another CMBS, people hear about CMBS, just, you know, those are your conduit lenders. Another source of money, again, those are non-recourse. I guess it's your alternative to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, will give you some more options, allow you so a little bit more flexibility. Good to look into, especially if you're looking at the 1 million plus property.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would more say like 5 million plus for sure.
Okay. Very good. Well, so those are some basic different types of lenders that we would approach, you know, based on the type of deal we are getting ourselves into.
Yep.
You know, one big hurdle that I think a lot of people would struggle with is just how they're going to qualify and meet the qualifications for the different lenders.
Yeah.
Obviously, if we're working with the syndication, there's a good chance we don't have all the money to bring down the deal.
Yep.
So, but we're going to be ones that are applying for the loan.
Yep.
So how do you, you know, connect point A to point B and make it all work?
Sure. So I think there's a big misconception. If you've read, you know, some of the multifamily books, or you hear it, you hear people say that, you know, you don't need to qualify to buy multifamily. It's based on the deal. Well, that's not true. That's kind of a big, I don't know, lie, I guess. Because you do have to qualify. It's not like you're qualifying for your own house, right? But they qualify the deal. They're gonna lend. If you've got A class property in an A class area and you get it for a great price under market, there's no capital renovations, it's got a pitched roof, it's, you know, $5 million, everything hits in the perfect little box to a T, you're gonna have a better chance at getting lending on that if you've got less experience and all that. You know, if you don't quote unquote qualify, you're going to have a better chance of getting a loan on that than you will if it's a C class property with a flat roof and, you know, that type of thing. But at the same time, think any lender will give you money if you're a newbie, just starting out, you're raising this money, you've got no experience, you've got low income, or maybe no income because this is your dream, and you've got little to no net worth, you're not going to get a loan. You're going to have to bring people in. So that's the, I guess, the lie I've been told so many times reading books that, oh, it's just get the deal and the money will come. Well, make sure you got the money before you go get the deal. I think that's very valuable advice. Now, not to scare anybody, but you do need to understand how you can, how you qualify and, or how you can find somebody else to help you qualify. And that's a key statement right there that I just said is, if you're getting non-recourse loan, there's people out there that'll sign on the loan for you as what's called a key principal or a loan sponsor. And so they'll sign on the loan for you. They'll take some money. They'll take maybe part of the deal, or it's all negotiable, right? But they will sign on it so you can get the deal done if they believe in you. So that statement is true, but it's also false.
Yeah.
So what are the lenders looking at? And this is going to vary depending on the type we're talking about. I'm just talking about like a national type lender. Local banks, they've got all kinds of different standards. It depends on the bank and all that kind of stuff. So what are they looking at? They're looking at your net worth. Your net worth should be at or near the loan amount. Okay. They're also looking at what your liquid capital is to purchase the property with reserves included. So they're going to want to see that you have in reserves 6 to 9 months of the monthly debt payment. So whatever your monthly debt payment is, multiply that by, to be safe, multiply that by 9 months. And that liquid capital can be from your raise, right? That can be from your raise, but you need to make sure you have that.
From the capital raise.
From the capital raise, yeah. The net worth can't be from the capital raise unless your investors are actually signing on the loan, which then they would expect more money. And then what's your experience? Have you ever done a deal like this? What's your team's experience? Your property manager and all that kind of stuff. So who's involved in this deal and what's their experience? So if you've done like some single families and duplexes and you try to go out and purchase a $5 million building, let's say it's a 100 unit building for $5 million, you're going to have a tough time getting a loan just you. You know, if your net worth is $10 million and you make, you know, $500,000 a year and, you know, all that, maybe you can get it. But if you're like most people out there that have just a few single families and duplexes, you don't have the net worth, likely. And if you do, you just don't have the experience because single families and duplexes don't really count as much experience. You know, it's just how it is to most lenders' eyes. So how do you get the loan then? If you're in that position, you've got to partner with the right people. You've got to either have them as partners, true partners, or you can have them as your key principal or key partner, where they're just basically, they're co-signing. They're like, you want to buy a house when you're 16, but you have no, or 18 when you have no money, your parents, they'll co-sign for you. That's what you're getting. So,
okay.
So the type of stuff you'll need to present them, you know, is, I already kind of talked about that. It's all that package that I talked about earlier, but then you also are going to want to give your personal financial statement, your tax returns, you'll show your bank statements, dive deep into your experience, all that kind of stuff. So they're going to want to know all that kind of stuff. So it's not that they don't look at you financially. They will look at your credit score. They'll look at all that kind of stuff, but they're not, it's not as closely looked at as the deal. It's got to be both.
Yep. And so, you know, that's, I really like the fact, you know, this whole podcast that you have going on is called Pillars of Wealth Creation. And we went ahead, you know, several episodes ago to discuss, you know, what are these different pillars. And so something just to maybe add to that discussion, that previous discussion, is, you know, it's good to have your taxes done. You know, it's good to have your net, to know what your net worth is. It's and then, you know, maybe as you're making your personal goals on an annual basis, you know, consider what your net worth is and consider where you want to see it be, so that that you can begin to qualify for these types of loans.
Yeah, John, you know, that, I mean, it's a little off topic, but it still does hit the topic. But you're spot on right there. Is if you're just beginning, do yourself a favor and do a personal financial statement. You include everything that you can think of, and you'll see that you don't have much money, which is fine, right? But then if I can promise you this, if you do a personal financial statement, if you commit to doing a personal financial statement, no matter where you're at, and you pay attention to that personal financial statement, you will grow your net worth. And I think it'll help you, allow you to grow it quicker than if you have no clue where you're at. What you pay attention to and what you focus on, obviously without obsession, because that's just would be wrong, but what you focus on and pay attention to will grow. So yeah, you're spot on. I mean, get your financial statement done and know where you're at.
Yep. So, and then on the other side of this, just, it's good to be networking with people that, you know, if you don't have the financial statement where it needs to be, to have those key partners, those key principals in the transaction that you have a built relationship with, that would be comfortable with partnering with you on a deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you've got to build your network. You've got to have people that trust you. Cause just because you think you can find a key partner, who's going to sign on a loan with you if they don't trust you or know you, you know, that's, and if they will, they're likely going to charge you a lot of money, a lot more than somebody who knows and trusts you. If you go to somebody who knows and trusts you and feels like you're going to do what you say, and it's a non-recourse, and they've got nothing to worry about because you're honest and trustworthy, and your word is your word, they're probably going to pay or going to expect less payment than somebody who doesn't know you, who doesn't know if they can trust you, but they're hoping they can. They're going to require a whole heap of a lot more money, likely, than that person you've built a relationship with. And that relationship goes with what we'll talk about next week too. And that's just raising the down payment.
Okay.
So,
well, I think that's a good segue to kind of wrap up this episode. You know, we've gone into quite a few different aspects of this, but it's possible that we've glossed over something that one of our listeners wants to go deeper in. And so that'd be a good opportunity to just comment on the episode. You can put in comments on the YouTube channel. You can put in comments on Facebook. And, you know, or you could just message Todd directly. Todd, do you want to give out what's the best way to people to reach you if they have a question?
I would say on Facebook or comment on YouTube. Yep. Would be two great ways. Of course, you can always go to my webpage, which is still being designed, embarrassingly enough. It's pillarsofwealthcreation.com. They can go to that, and but they can fill out information, give their information, but then they'll get, you know, some newsletters and stuff from me too. So if they don't want that stuff, don't go on there and sign up. But yeah, you can do that, and you can contact me that way as well.
Cool. Well, I'm excited for the next topic that we'll cover next week. And yeah, be sure to subscribe if you haven't yet. Be sure to give it a good rating and review. And unless you have anything else, Todd, we'll call it good here.
Yeah, I agree. Helping us build our brand and our network, and so going onto iTunes and giving us a rating review will really help. If you get value out of this, we'd love for you to give us a rating review if you haven't already. And we would love for you to subscribe and then share it out with your network. So if you get any value, if you think there's anybody else that would get value, you know, share it with them, send them a text with a link or an email or whatever, or share it on Facebook, whatever you can do. And that would be great, because I'd love to, you know, hopefully this is a positive, you know, thing for everybody to listen to. And I'd love to positively affect as many people as we can. So
it's very good.
Awesome. Well, that's it. We are done and signing off. Make every day a Saturday, man.
All right. Take care.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with HomeInvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.